From Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Lori London reporting. Russia said Thursday it will expel an equal number of diplomats from those nations, including the U.S., that have expelled Russian diplomats over the poisoning of an ex-Russian spy in Britain. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres says the world is approaching a situation similar to the Cold War as tensions rise between the U.S. and Russia.
I am really very concerned. I think we are coming to a situation that is similar to a large extent to what we lived during the Cold War, but with two very important differences. In the Cold War, there were clearly two superpowers with a complete control of the situation of two areas in the world. Now we have many other actors.
Guterres says with the more players in conflicts than two superpower era and fewer communication channels set up to keep problems from escalating. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un and South Korean President Moon Jae-in will hold a bilateral summit on April 27th. Undersecretary of State for Public Diplomacy and Public Affairs Heather Nauert reacted to Thursday's announcement of the meeting.
I think that meeting overall that was announced between the Republic of Korea and North Korea just moves us closer to the point where the United States can sit down with North Korea and have a meeting.
President Trump, who has exchanged insults with Kim Jong-un in the past, has also accepted his offer to meet sometime in May. Meanwhile, U.S. President Donald Trump attacked online tech giant Amazon again on Thursday, accusing the company of paying too little taxes and being responsible for putting retailers out of business. This is VOA. Nobel laureate Malala Yousafzai returned Thursday to her native Pakistan, nearly 6 years after she was shot by Islamist militants in her home district of Swat, for advocating female education.
Today, I am very happy that after 5.5 years, I have set foot on my soil, my country.
Prime Minister Abbasi welcomed the news and said she was returning as the most prominent citizen of Pakistan. The Syrian army is said to be preparing to launch a major operation against the last rebel-held position in eastern Ghouta. The militant group Jaish al-Islam has been reluctant to leave Douma as it negotiates protection from forced relocation to the local populace. Meanwhile, UN Special Envoy for Syria, Staffan de Mistura, says civilian suffering is unimaginable and again called for a ceasefire so aid workers can enter.
The UN is prepared. We are actually preparing all our capacity in Damascus and elsewhere in order to actually reach now the civilian population in Eastern Ghouta and hopefully in Douma as much as possible.
Meanwhile, Turkey has vowed to take action if Kurdish fighters don't withdraw from Syria's Manjbi region. Prominent human rights attorney Amal Clooney will be representing two Reuters journalists under arrest in Myanmar. Ryan Brooks reports.
Clooney, the wife of actor George Clooney, said in a statement the two reporters, quote, were being prosecuted simply because they reported the news. Both have told relatives that they were arrested almost immediately after they had been handed rolled up papers by two policemen they had never met before, after they'd been invited for dinner by the officers. The UN and many Western nations have demanded the charges be dropped. Their arrests come amid concerns by rights activists of a crackdown on press freedom in Myanmar.
That's Ryan Brooks reporting. Pope Francis marked Holy Thursday washing the feet of 12 inmates in a central Rome prison. He also celebrated the traditional Chrism Mass, urging priests to be spiritually close to their flocks and not insist only on preaching laws. Sabina Castelfranco has more for VOA.
At the prison, the Pope also greeted inmates and visited those who were sick inside the prison's infirmary. On Good Friday, Francis will preside over the Way of the Cross procession at Rome's ancient Colosseum, reenacting Christ's crucifixion. Sabina Castelfranco for VOA News, Rome.
A Kenyan opposition politician says authorities drugged and forcibly deported him to Dubai. I'm Lori London in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
America. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, March 30th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Sierra Leone police ban vehicular traffic on presidential election runoff day tomorrow, Saturday.
The restriction on the movement of vehicles has nothing, absolutely nothing, to do with rigging the elections in favor of any political party. It was done purely in the interest of internal security and public safety.
Superintendent Ibrahim Samura is a spokesman for the Sierra Leone National Police. Botswana's president steps down tomorrow after serving two terms. Zimbabwe launches anti-corruption course to tackle high cases of graft. And Ugandan opposition leader Kizza Besigye has criticized the Kenyan government for its treatment of Miguna Miguna.
Once you get to a situation where there is no respect of the rule of law, then you are really in a very, very slippery zone as a country, because then laws mean nothing.
The story plus Samson O'Malley Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Sierra Leone police have banned vehicular traffic in the capital of Freetown and other provinces on presidential election runoff day tomorrow, Saturday. Authorities say the 12-hour ban, which will come into effect at 6 a.m. local time on Saturday, does not include vehicles accredited by the National Electoral Commission or those belonging to election observers and media houses. The two candidates in the runoff election are former Foreign Minister Samura Kamara of the ruling All People's Congress Party, the APC, and former military ruler and retired Brigadier Julius Mada Bio of the main opposition Sierra Leone People's Party, SLPP. Police spokesman Ibrahim Samura tells viewers Peter Clotty the vehicular ban will help ensure peace and stability in the capital, Freetown, and other major provinces during the vote.
We actually want to create a rather conducive atmosphere, an atmosphere of peace, unity, and tranquility for the people of Sierra Leone to go out in their numbers and cast their votes. The capital city of Freetown is visually congested with vehicles, especially when it comes to vehicular movement during normal working days or working periods. So as a result, in order to enhance the safety and security of our people for voting materials, we have decided to put a restriction on vehicular movement.
Some international poll observers and local poll observers said the restriction of vehicular traffic affected people negatively and prevented some others from voting because some might have registered in one part of the city and they might have moved to another part of the city.
During election day, some misguided political elements usually use vehicles with offensive weapons like machetes to intimidate voters in certain areas which are considered to be the stronghold of certain political parties. So, to forestall any form of intimidation, to forestall any form of violence, as a responsible security entity, we have decided to impose the restriction on the movement of vehicles. Now, we did not do this alone. We invited the various political parties to a meeting of police headquarters. We met federally to discuss the terms and conditions of the restriction. They requested for amendments to be made. Those amendments were made. They requested for modifications to be made. Those modifications to be made. And from the total of 16 political parties, we have approximately 12 to 14, in fact, that signed, you know, the Memorandum of Understanding. And the reason why the Memorandum of Understanding was generated by the Sierra Leone Police and supported by 12 or more political parties, it is because they have realized that it is in the interest of the wider public of internal security, internal peace, and internal stability.
The SLPP, the main opposition party in Sierra Leone, complained that this restriction is part of the plot to rig the election. Now, two, the SLPP also said that the police seem to always side with the ruling party when it comes to violent-related issues. How do you address some of these criticisms?
The restriction on the movement of vehicles has nothing, absolutely nothing, to do with rigging the elections in favor of any political party. It was done purely in the interest of internal security and public safety. It was done purely in the interest of the voting public in Sierra Leone.
Superintendent Ibrahim Samura is the spokesman for the Sierra Leone National Police. He was speaking with viewers Peter Clotte from the capital, Freetown. Botswana President Ian Khama will step down tomorrow, Saturday, after serving two terms. He will be succeeded by his vice president the next 18 months before the next elections. Meanwhile, President Khama has been touring the country to bid farewell to the citizens, some of whom have presented him with cows, chickens, and money to thank him for his leadership. But Barman Pete, former news editor of Botswana's leading daily newspaper, the Mgangi, says that Botswanans have mixed emotions about President Khama's departure. On the one hand, he said Botswanans are happy about a bloodless transfer of power and President Khama's stewardship of the economy. On the other hand, Pete says some Botswanans feel the president could have done a better job in reducing the country's high youth unemployment rate.
Public opinion is divided here. There are those who believe that President Khama has really improved the lives of the citizens. But on the other hand, there are those who believe that he has failed his mandate. Many people are happy that the president is stepping down and is complied with the constitution of the republic. So I'm not aware of any people who are saying he should stay in power for the next 50 years. Many people are happy that it's a bloodless transfer of power from one president to another, something that is very rare in the continent of Africa. So we are very happy that he is stepping down, although we will be going to elections next year.
Those who say that the president has failed, what reasons do they give?
They argue that the president leaves a high statistics of youth unemployment. Although youth unemployment is a global problem, they believe that Botswana should have done better to fight this problem and create jobs.
I was reading an article where the citizens of Botswana are showering the president with all kinds of gifts. Money, cows, chickens, some of them even saying that he should stay for another 50 years. How is it divided among the people? Where does most of his support come from?
This thing of gifts is not new. Former President Sekou Masira, he also got gifts when they were leaving office. They got gifts in the form of livestock, in the form of cash, or even cars. Secondly, on the issue of public opinion, it's a few people who are saying the president should stay in power in 50 years. In fact, I'm hearing it for the first time from you. What I know is that people are happy that the president has obeyed the law, complied with the constitution to serve two terms and step down.
Let's talk about Africa. These days, you see in some African countries, some leaders are even changing their constitutions. They want to stay in power. And so when you see a leader like President Khama stepping down after two terms, what sort of message do you think this sends to the rest of Africa?
It's a good message. I think African leaders should know that power is not hereditary. But what is important is that they should know that they are not the only people who are blessed with wisdom to lead people. They should step down when the time comes. It's unfortunate that the continent still has big problems of having to go to civil wars or even dictatorships because one individual does not want to step down. So I think it's good that the president is stepping down after serving two terms. It's a good thing for the African continent.
Barman Pete is the former news editor of the Umengi newspaper, Botswana's leading daily. He was speaking with me from the capital, Habaruni. Listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Bott in Washington. Today is Friday, March 30th, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 15 minutes past the hour. Ugandan opposition leader Kizza Besigye has criticized the Kenyan government for its treatment of Miguna Miguna. Besigye says, as a member of the East African community, he is concerned with what is happening in the neighboring Kenya. He says what is happening to Miguna is an abuse of human rights with impunity. Mugumi David Rakarinch reports from Kampala.
Kenyan opposition politician Miguna was yesterday deported to Dubai as he came back from Canada, where he was deported sometime last month. Miguna's woes started after he administered the oath of office to opposition leader Raila Odinga at his mock presidential swearing-in ceremony in January to protest President Uhuru Kenyatta's re-election. While addressing journalists in Kampala this Thursday, Dr. Besigye described Miguna's situation as regrettable and illegal.
I think the case of Miguna has been really badly managed. I think they have already, you know, created a very bad precedent, and I think they should really find ways of redressing it and stepping back from committing more and more violations.
In the aftermath of the 2016 presidential elections, Dr. Besigye did not concede defeat and instead declared himself a winner. A video was immediately posted on social media sites showing him swearing in at an identified location. Dr. Besigye took both a presidential oath and also of allegiance, and his party later raised a statement saying it was to establish a transitional government of national unity. Besigye was arrested and charged with treason. Dr. Besigye has contested and lost four times against the incumbent president, Yoweri Kaguta Museveni. In 2006 and 2011, Besigye petitioned the Uganda highest court, the Supreme Court, for electoral fraud. On both occasions, the Supreme Court agreed with him on many grounds but upheld election results, saying the violations did not substantially affect the results. Besigye says what happens to either country of East Africa affects the other. He says he's grateful for being hosted by Kenyans after fleeing for his life during the then Obote regime.
I thank Kenyans for hosting me. 1981, I was in Kenya, having survived death here in the Nairo mansions. We have many Kenyan refugees here in Kiriandongo who have been here since the massacres of 2007. So problems of governance, whether in Kenya or here, affect all of us.
The Kenyan government deported Miguna despite the court ruling against it.
Once you get to a situation where there is no respect of the rule of law, then you are really in a very, very slippery zone as a country, because then laws mean nothing. And that is a very dangerous situation.
The Kenyan High Court judge on Wednesday said government officials ignored the orders of the court in their treatment of Mr. Miguna and fined them $2,000 each for defying court orders. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Ruakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
Burundi, Tanzania, and the UN Refugee Agency are set to conduct a massive Burundian refugee repatriation from Tanzania. This comes after the Tripartite Commission ended its 20th meeting on Thursday in the Burundian capital, Bujumbura. Moses Javier Rimana has the story.
Tanzania, Burundi and the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees have agreed to kick off a voluntary repatriation exercise of Burundian refugees from Tanzania. According to the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, almost 20,000 refugees have already registered themselves, whose intention to return has already been verified. It is expected that not less than 72,000 Burundian refugees have already expressed their wish to return. Rajab Hassan Gamaha was the head of the Tanzanian delegation and currently the Tanzanian ambassador to Burundi.
Having assessed that, and in view of the fact that there is encouraging progress on the ground in Burundi in terms of peace, security and political stability, as well as the big number of refugees who have volunteered to return, we have agreed to fast track, to increase the pace of assisting those refugees to come back to Burundi.
In a joint communique of the 20th meeting of the Tripartite Commission for the voluntary repatriation of the Burundian refugees in Tanzania, a plan of action was developed with the overall planning figure for 2018 that will start early next month. At least 2,000 Burundian refugees will be repatriated from Tanzania every week, and the exercise is expected to continue until the end of this year. Pascal Barandagiye is the Burundi Home Affairs Minister. He says that this should be well understood, that the government is not forcing refugees to be repatriated, but will only receive those who have volunteered to repatriate. According to the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, by 22nd March this year, more than 20,000 Burundian refugees were repatriated from Tanzania, a number which is higher than the planned figure foreseen by the last Tripartite Commission. Gogo Hakporti is the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees country representative to Burundi.
Le rapatriement volontaire.
She says that the voluntary repatriation is not among the solutions, but the best solution, which allows refugees to re-establish themselves in their home countries. She says that the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees will continue to support both governments in this operation. Tanzania currently hosts more than 3 million refugees and asylum seekers, of which more than 200,000 are Burundian refugees. This Wednesday, Rwandan police said that it arrested 33 Burundian refugees accused of inciting fellow refugees to reject assistance from the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees. Rwanda authorities said that the act was punishable in the penal code. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
Zimbabwe has launched anti-corruption courts to tackle high cases of corruption in the country. Zimbabwe ranks 157 out of 185 on the World Corruption Index released recently by Transparency International. 12 magistrates are expected to preside over cases of corruption in the 5 anti-corruption courts officially launched on Thursday in Bulawayo by Chief Justice Luke Malaba. In Harare and Bulawayo, Zimbabwe's second largest city, Justice Minister Ziyambi Ziyambi says the courts are part of its 100-day rapid results initiative. Ziyambi tells Pleasant Zulu of VOA Zimbabwe service that this is the time to curb rampant corruption in Zimbabwe.
I think it's very significant in the history of our justice delivery system in that we now have dedicated anti-corruption courts. And it's significant in two ways. Firstly, we are sending a message to would-be people who want to be corrupt that it's no longer business as usual. So it's a deterrent measure on its own. When people, they are conscious that if I engage in corrupt activities, there is an express route to prison. The second point is that we mean business. We have to deal with corruption in order to turn around the economy. As a result, we sat down, we agreed all the stakeholders that are involved in the justice delivery system, from the police, the anti-corruption, the Judicial Service Commission, the National Prosecuting Authority, and I directed them that we need anti-corruption courts that are specific to the issue so that we send a message to everyone to ensure that we get rid of it and we instill confidence within our citizenry that Zimbabwe is no longer going to tolerate corrupt activities.
But prior to this launch, how long was it taking for the judiciary services to clear some alleged corruption cases?
Prior to the launch, you realize that the cases were treated normally. In other words, you were arrested, there was a normal role, you had to join the queue. And what we realized with corrupt people is once you give them a long time before the trial, they will negotiate their way and corrupt those officials. So what we are trying to do is we want to ensure that we expedite the cases as quickly as possible so that those corrupt people, before they know it, the cases are concluded.
So this is also to fulfill one of the pledges made by President Emmerson Mnangagwa that he is going to deal decisively with corrupt activities.
Oh, yes, exactly the point. When he spoke about corruption in his inauguration speech and in the various forums, we then took it up as a ministry to say, as one of our 100-day programs, we need to address the issue of corruption as one of the issues that the president indicated that is very central to his administration.
That was Zimbabwe Justice Minister Ziyambi Ziyambi speaking with Blessing Zulu of VOA Zimbabwe Service. Minutes past the hour, time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is something, O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you, James. We begin with the Commonwealth Games in Australia. And with just 5 days to the commencement of the Games, Kenya's Cabinet Secretary for Sports and Heritage, Rashid Enchesa, has confirmed that all local and international alliances have been settled for athletes representing Kenya at the Commonwealth Games. This was after the payment of the athletes' allowances became a subject of controversy a few weeks ago and threatened the participation of the Kenyan athletes.
I can confidently confirm to Kenyans that all the participants, the athletes, have received their local allowance and their international allowances. And when I was being vetted, I was very clear. I said that I will not allow the athletes in this country to be frustrated.
Elsewhere in South Africa, 800 meters world champion Caster Semenya will be the flag bearer for Team South Africa during the opening ceremony of the 2018 Commonwealth Games in Australia, which begins on the 4th of April. Caster Semenya has promised at least 2 gold medals when she takes to the tracks in the 800 and 1,500 meters.
Main goal is to win 2 gold. Obviously now the main thing is to focus on what I'm doing, just focus. Being disciplined and being healthy, that's the most important thing.
Although South African athletes to the Games have set for themselves podium finish in order to better South Africa's fifth position in the overall medals table from the last edition.
We're under a lot of pressure, but hopefully we'll perform. I'm confident that we'll come with gold medals.
As the South African women's hockey team, we are going for those medals. We've been in situations where we get so close, we can taste it, but that medal has just eluded us.
And from Ghana, Raphael Bosio Nkebe, 3-time Paralympian, has been appointed as the general captain of Team Ghana for the 2018 Commonwealth Games in Gold Coast, Australia. Nkebe is regarded as the most senior of all the athletes at the Games with a lot of experience in international competition. And on to football. The South African Football Association says its president, Danny Jordan, will continue leading the association despite rape charges pressed against him by a former ANC Member of Parliament, Jennifer Ferguson, 2 weeks ago. This position was adopted by SAFA's Extraordinary Council meeting. Pobolan Govindasamy is the chair of SAFA Ethics Committee.
We support very strongly women in their struggle against all forms of abuse and violence. Having said this, however, we note that there have been, over a period of 6 months, a large-scale media attacks by some of the media on our president.
And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend, and we look forward to your report again on Monday morning. Briefly, before we leave you, summary of Africa news. Sierra Leone police have banned vehicular traffic in the capital of Freetown and other provinces on presidential election runoff day tomorrow, Saturday. And that is it for this Friday, March 30th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good weekend.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.